God would let them touch men, young boys, in all 48 states. It was kind of a Sinai experience, and Walt told me that Dawson had in mind the 40-day probation period that Moses, God was giving him a 40-day test, sort of, and Doss had that in mind at the time. His theology was that the Word was a living and a present reality and a God's voice for the present moment, regardless of where it was. He used to, of course, he was brought up on the teaching of dispensations, of the seven dispensations and so on, but it worried him because all these good promises in Isaiah were going to waste. He says, we claim Isaiah 26:3, thou'lt keep in perfect peace. Why don't we claim 58:12? Why isn't that for us? Raise up the foundations of many generations. And we claim Isaiah 58:11, the Lord will guide thee continually, and so on. Christians claim that, but they won't claim 12. So he decided that it was his own, maybe his own brand of neo-orthodoxy, I don't know. But God spoke to men directly from the Word, and this was for him. These promises that God had given him, he took extremely seriously. He felt memory scripture gave channels for God to speak to you too. That there was not a flexibility there where God could speak from any portion that was memorized at any time. He could just bring to mind, and he often did. He put in his journal how God brought messages to his mind through the memorized word. Are you tired? Okay. November 1931, he got poison oak and he was laid aside and settled his life work question that it would be training guerrillas for warfare, training young men. He didn't know whether God would do it through the fishermen's clubs or what, but Isaiah 43 was his chapter. I'll give men for thee, people for thy life, and the many promises all through that chapter of Isaiah 43, and then 58. Then he decided to choose a team and go to work on it, reaching the world, training guerrillas. So he formed a team of six chosen Minutemen, they called them, taking their name from the Revolutionary War, Minutemen, ready to fight in a minute. One man from each town of six towns, and they formed an international fishermen's club team. They rode around on motorcycles and held meetings, held gospel teams meetings, and they decided to keep their business sharp, be sharp businessmen for the Lord, be prompt and really be God's commandos. And from February 1932 to June 33, the minutes of the team are recorded. They met here at 5 a.m. for prayer in a park in Pasadena, and then scatter to this, that, and the other church for their meetings. They go and infiltrate Sunday school classes, and they just use all kinds of methods to recruit a man here and there who is ready to follow Christ. They motorcycled all over Southern California. They just rode around starting clubs, fishermen's clubs that won people to Christ, the challenge to memorize, challenge to win souls. And whenever they'd find a sharp young fellow that was really taking the bait, well, they'd grab him and recruit him. And they planned their strategy to fulfill a great commission by taking a town. And they took Pasadena. And they took Long Beach. They took Whittier. Best I can figure the time, it was probably the time when Mr. Nixon was growing up in Whittier. I don't know. I don't know whether he ever ran into this strange crowd or not. Starting a fisherman's club school, he decided to. Long Beach with classes and memory and study and public speaking. That's what they decided to do. They had a daily dozen, rigid standards of discipline. Daily. It began with seven items, and every time they'd think this was too much and they'd meet to reduce it, they'd add two or three more items. One was spend an hour a day in prayer, win a touch a soul a day, memorize a verse a day, and so on. They had 12 things. They call it the TNT, the trust and tackle. And all of them were game. They're all game to follow. At least by the end of the meeting they were, because Das always whipped up such tremendous enthusiasm. And his fervor, he just could not stand the notion that all human performance tends toward mediocrity. He had an all-night prayer meeting in April 1932, and they asked God, quote, to touch 2 million young people through us, unquote. And they counted 200 boys in clubs and prayed for 1,000. This request grew out of the 40 days prayer meeting and was fulfilled through the navigators, if it has been fulfilled. In Das's Bible, in the margin by Isaiah 47 and 48, he wrote, quote, that God will give 2 million souls to be saved in USA through the efforts of this work. Now, nobody knows whether that's been reached or not. I wouldn't say that it hadn't. If so, we've already set new goals, and Lord Sandy's got a bunch of them to tell us about this week. But that was a fantastic request then. 2 million souls. Goodness. He thought of the work, quote, as the Minutemen, reaching boys and girls through fishermen's clubs. But 8 months later, in an all-night prayer meeting, they felt God was going to expand their work and decided to disassociate from the International Fishermen's Club. And Walter Stanton observed, Das always had to build on his own foundation. His being in somebody else's framework wasn't comfortable. The notebook, the navigator notebook, began with the Minutemen. They had little cards that they carry prayer lists, the cards in their pocket that have a prayer list, the business list, and the club duties, and the personal duties. And they were striving constantly to be alert businessmen for God. Das had learned this the hard way, because one time Miss Thomas asked him, where are those little cards you used to carry in your pocket to remind you to do things? He says, oh, I've decided to let the Holy Spirit lead me. I don't need that. That's a prop. She said, well, you're forgetting a few things. And so he decided he'd resume the card system for remembering. And the notebooks, of course, were designed and redesigned and continued on through into the nav years. And I don't know, changed sizes, 8.5 by 5.5, 3 by 6, so on. And he began to run out of gas physically at age 26. He was driving himself so hard through his enthusiasm that he, and his devotion to the Lord was the same, but the candle kind of flickered, and the discipline became very hard for him to do, and especially since he had to set the pace for these guys that he was roaring around with. He'd get out of bed to go and witness to somebody, because he'd rather do that than fail an assignment. He heard this story, how he got up and dressed and went out and found a hitchhiker and said, listen, I've got something to tell you before I can go to bed. And of course it turned out that this hitchhiker was a man that had been searching for the truth for 20 years. And Das led him to Christ, Mr. Ford. But this kind of thing went on all the time. About 9 months, the team had taken only 3 cities, Long Beach, Whittier, and Pasadena. And they had flourishing clubs now made up of young men whom they had grabbed here and there and found willing to be discipled. Men were getting into the Word, learning to witness. And there was lots of other ministry opportunities, but Das began to think about it. How long would it take to reach the United States at this rate? They'd only taken 3 cities. How long would it take to reach the world? The idea of producing reproducers hadn't hit him until 13 years after this point. But he believed Isaiah 43:4 was his promise. He prayed for laborers. He began to realize the vast difference between a believer and a laborer, and the need to concentrate on building laborers. He began to preach that God can do more through one man who is 100% than through 100 who are only 90%. You've heard that statement, I'm sure. At this time, during the Minutemen period, 1932, he recorded the request, quote, that God will soon bring us into touch with a mighty band of young men, strong, rugged soldiers of the cross, with an eye single to his glory. Underlining this change of thinking was a shocking discovery that he picked up a hitchhiker whom he had formerly led to Christ, and there was no sign that he was a Christian at all. Hit-and-run evangelism was out. He suddenly realized that this was a mistake. And From that time on, he threw himself into following up every soul he won. It was far heavier work than soul winning. These two convictions he reached about the same time. The need to build laborers and the need to follow up new Christians were prominent in his ministry the rest of his life, and he harped on it. And one of those who listened, of course, was Billy Graham. And now evangelists everywhere wouldn't think of having evangelism without follow-up. It has become a household word. Lila remembers that the first year of their marriage, he was diligently making card records of everybody he'd witnessed to and following them up by letter, and mainly writing letters to them to meet their spiritual needs and help them grow. In June 1932, Lila graduated from high school. She was 18. And in July, they married in the little upstairs church, the Bible church, with V.B. Morgan officiating. His relation to Lila was kind of that of a pastor and teacher as well as a husband. She looked at him as her spiritual leader, and he was constantly teaching her and training her, which, of course, he had started quite young. He was very careful to stay with God's plan, and he wanted to establish her as his partner in God's service. So they settled on this verse, Isaiah 60:11, for their home. Thy gates should be open continually, they should not be shut day nor night, and so on. And they had a prior commitment of their home to the Lord. Isaiah 58:12 was important. It was too important to blow it for the wrong start in marriage. So he wanted to get this off on the right start. And he was even ready to break the engagement once when she broke her promise. This was the only quarrel they had. She broke her promise and had her hair cut. And he, being an idealist, thought, well, that's once. Yeah. But they got together again. And in the first year they were married, they lived six places. One time they lived with Irwin and Margaret Moon. Irwin Moon, the head of Moody Institute of Science now, he was quite a joker, as was Dawson. And apparently it was quite an uproar where they lived, four of them in the same household. They said that they never knew what was going to happen or who was going to get hurt. But Moon was building a 10-inch telescope, and they pastoring a little church, and they had a joint ministry of around Southern California there. It was a time of transition and waiting on God. Dawson, something broke loose in the lumber yard and hit his foot, and he was laid up for weeks to pray. And as soon as he went back to work, there was another, he broke his toe and got to take time off to pray again. And these weeks, he considered his future ministry, and the wheel was one thing he was absolutely sure of, but he didn't know what vehicle would come in. A daily dozen was producing a guilty feeling. The Minutemen disciplines was producing guilt, and so he kind of simplified the requirements there. And at this point, he met Les Spencer. He began to see his ministry in two categories. One, to sow beside all waters, to just minister wherever he could, teach everywhere, and challenge everyone. And two, to target on one man for hours and hours. He began to get this vision of targeting in on one man to really pour it in. And Spencer was the first of those men. When the Minutemen ended, which was right about that time, he had time for Les Spencer, Gurney Harris, and those others who just were showing up. Now, from Spencer's time, 1933, April 33, Dawson and Lila were living in this beautiful dream cottage, the first house they'd had of their own, $12 a month rent furnished. And he wrote his journal, "I truly thank God for the little home he has given Buddy and me for a place to serve him. The home is open to all. Nothing hinders meeting off to pray." The attitude toward the provision of material things, a home, was that it was a place to serve God. This was typical, and it was significant. A couple's Bible study met there one night. Teenage boys met there. The Minutemen made it their base of operation. The Montecito Park Young People planned a conference there, and he had a Whittier Fisherman's Club, weekend trips to San Diego for servicemen. And then Spencer, who was referred to him by a friend, and he looked him up, this sailor. And it was at this time I said that his rude awakening, that lives touched, didn't mean lives trained, and God held him responsible to follow through with lives touched. So he began to turn his activities over to other people and concentrate on individuals. Spencer watched him witness to a man one night. They were by a schoolhouse. They were sitting there in the car reading the Bible, and the guard who was taking care of this building, a school building or something, came around and asked them what they're doing, and he showed him the Bible, and they went inside, and Doss thought this would be a good opportunity for Spencer to see a witnessing situation, so he witnessed to the man and explained the plan of salvation. The man did not make a decision, but he listened attentively. And so Spencer said, "I wish I could do that." He said, "I'd give my right arm if I could do that." And Doss said, "Well, you can. I'll teach you." And so he began coming. Spencer went back to the ship that night, 1 o'clock in the morning, and shook Gurney Harris and said, "Hey, I met a real man of God tonight." Gurney was his buddy. Gurney had been smoking and kind of hiding it. And but Gurney began to realize that he needed help as a Christian too. And so as Lester came and studied with Doss, he passed things on to Gurney. And he wanted Gurney to get in touch with Doss in there. And he wanted Doss to teach him too. And of course Doss told him, "Well, you pass on him what I've given you. If you can't do that, why?" "Well," Les said, "I haven't been trained. I'm not trained." He says, "Well, if you can't do it, well then, I'm not doing it." So they finally, the two of them, began studying and memorizing and praying and so on. And Doss felt, Spencer wanted him to move closer to the than 30 miles from the dock so that he could be closer to where they could minister to them. And of course this was a big event to give up this lovely little home and move somewhere, but even then the sailor ministry didn't sound like too great a possibility, because sailors really had a bad image in those days. They had signs told that said no sailors or dogs allowed a lot of places. And There was not the clean cut look that came in with World War II. It was just a bunch of roughnecks sometimes. But Doss made a decision that they would move, and they moved into a one room bungalow in an auto court in Lomita, and he had a garage behind a Texaco station where they could hold meetings for the fellas, sitting on the edge of the bunks. In a little garage behind this Texaco station, and the fellows could also stay overnight there and sleep on the bunks. That was the extent of the situation. And I thought, well, this is a big deal for a man that God had promised great things. It was like promising David he'd be king of Israel and then sending him out the woods to run from Saul all this time while he inherited his promises. But Doss was excited, and he wrote down in his journal, he says that he felt God was going to do something outstanding in his work very soon. 4 months passed. Nothing outstanding had happened except sitting on the edge of these bunks with a couple of sailors studying the Bible. This right here was a test of faith, I thought. And then he met, they brought along Goodrick and Dedrick to these filling station meetings. But here again, it was doing the best he could with what he had. Doss never felt limited by circumstances, no matter how meager they were. They were always ideal. Everything is always just great. It's a marvelous opportunity sitting there. And Lila would bring over the baked beans and the potato salad from 2 miles away where she cooked them on a two-plate burner. And they'd all have dinner there in that little garage back at the Texaco station. During those hours of study, where Doss threw himself into teaching these fellows, one of them said he would steer them away from a false teaching that had been brought in by teaching them the Word. They brought Goodrick, who was an evolutionist, and Dedrick, who was an agnostic. And Goodrick came because he admired Gurney's life, Dedrick made a decision later on, because Goodrick did. He said, if God can do it for him, he can sure do it for me. So he had those four men, four sailors, and at the end of August, another step of faith, he quit his job in the lumber yard and took charge of the station so he'd have more time for the ministry and a freer schedule to plan what he wanted. He had a $2 a day income from the station, which bought a lot of beans in the Depression. So everything was just ideal. It was really kind of ludicrous, but those four fellows that sat on the edge of those bunks studying the Bible, 30 years later, or a third of a century, actually 35 years later, Les had 30 years in service with the American Sunday School Union, establishing missionary churches and Sunday schools all over the United States. Gurney had close to 30 years invested in East Africa as a missionary in the Congo. Goodrick was a pastor in Northwest United States and a teacher at Multnomah, which he still is, School of the Bible. Dedrick is with Wycliffe Bible Translators, has given a language to an Indian tribe and given them the New Testament in that language. Plus, hundreds of men in the Navy that they touched, those four, who are in God's service around the world. So those were some foundations, weren't they? Many generations, even just those four. And in late fall 1933, Spencer and Harris made their step of faith and asked Dawson to go full-time and be their missionary to the fleet, and they would, among them, make up his support. So this was a big step, because the first baby was due, and they moved into a second-floor apartment in San Pedro, which was the first real navigator home. Now, Lila, too, was enthusiastic about all this. You know, here she was, 19 years old, bright-eyed. She'd wrote in her diary, as yet we had not moved in, but we had several here for dinner. And next Saturday she wrote, the first meeting of the fellows in their new home. Their new home. Isn't that good? She was enthusiastic and thrilled the way that God worked, and a very efficient manager. Gurney called her a lovely lady at 19. And she had a hard role to play, but she did it well. He said she was Spencer said she was a genius with the budget. Maybe we should get her in here again with the budget. Then it was here that the fellow stayed overnight on the floor and slept on the floor and rose, and that you've heard the story of how one would come and knock at the door in the middle of the night and hand Doss a dollar and say, I meant to give you this, and I have to go on early duty, and so I won't see you in the morning. So Doss would wait till everybody was asleep, go out and push the car down the street and go and take the dollar to the all-night market and get stuff for breakfast for the gang that was sleeping on the floor. And this is the way God provided in those days. He made little mottos, scripture mottos, with a wood-burning pencil on plywood, and he also made some silk screen work on parchment paper. And he took orders and sold these and helped support the work that way. New sailors came. Virgil Hook was one. He brought Jim Downing later to the same home, who was non-Christian. And he said, Jim wrote in his journal afterwards that, well, he was quite self-sufficient young man and quite proud. And he wrote that Dawson had been very sincere in discussing salvation with him, but he felt that the home, by and large, was for more homesick fellows that couldn't take care of themselves. And that was it for another year and a half for Jim. 4 months after they moved to San Pedro, they needed a larger place, and so they moved to the beach, Long Beach, and right by the Pike Amusement Park, and where they had a good-sized house, or what they thought was good size. Bigger place, holding more people, would automatically be better. That was the reasoning. But it didn't work out that way. The first four would help minister to the others, and they man-to-man time, group time. It was a convenient place, and it brought hordes of people who were kind of half committed or just hungry for donuts. And Dawson's main ministry was with his inner core group of men. And not with the multitudes, but he didn't see that till after they'd moved away from the beach and into a little less convenient place. And they saw food and gasoline provided these right-hand men could see God providing gasoline and just the nick of time to go somewhere, or food in the nick of time to eat it. And they saw the sacrifice that Doss and Lila made of time and privacy, which was a big sacrifice, sharing their lives day and night with real closeness with these men. Doss would take some of his top men out to the hills for early prayer meetings and spread out maps and help them to get world vision by praying over these maps and praying for missionaries. He sent them out to sea and for weeks, and then could stand on their own and prove that the memorized word and time spent with God was profitable. And then that summer in the mountains, Doss came with a further conviction about the power of the word and the trustworthiness of the wheel principle. He'd always felt these strongly for himself, but now he felt that this was a thing, and he knew that he was so vulnerable to temptation himself, he felt that this was the only thing that could hold these men while they were out at sea. So he saw the wheel and memory of Scripture in a new light, the light that meant that they were really key for building disciples. And discipline was a fight right on straight through, both for him and for Lila. He was always making new starts and working out new schedules with her, and with great enthusiasm they were going to start a new schedule and get with it. And he even talked to her one time about reading Sunday paper before she had her devotions, and he put in his journal, "I may stop the paper." this idea of taking action more than just a little rebuke. Well, our time is up, and we're on this page right here. So shall we quit for now?